Session number 9202, rule number 5.
Mr. Ray, Reel 5. Could you tell us a little about the arrangements and reorganisation at Alexandra?
Not quite sure about that, because I know that I have a feeling it could be the Corder Castle. But anyway, we were on the same boat as certain regiments of the 29th Division. Dublin Fusiliers, Munster Fusiliers, the Hants Regiment, the Essex Regiment, and I do know, because I did intermingle with a few of the Munsters and the Dublins and the Hants and the Regiment. It just occurs to me now that we were ashore in Alexandra, because I recall playing draughts with one of the men in the Hants Regiment. These men, by the way, of the 29th, excepting the Royal Scots, they'd come from service in India. I never met more highly trained men than those men in the 29th Division. And you felt you could go anywhere with them. As far as we were concerned, in our imagination, in my imagination at least, we had no training. Because say what you like, you can't train a soldier unless it takes 2 years at least to train a soldier. And you couldn't do it in 6 months. Never in the creation.
So you were all aboard a ship, possibly the Corder Castle, but not necessarily. Where did you go to from then?
And then when we set sail from there, we went to Mudros, and into Mudros, that's Lemnos, isn't it? Mudros Harbour, and the fleet was in there. There was ships and ships and ships and ships. It was an ideal harbour for, well, it's a natural harbour, and we were there for 3 or 4 days, because the Munsters and the Dublins, they went off doing some training.
But you didn't?
No, we didn't, no.
Was it a sort of inspiring scene, the scene in the harbour? Did it give you a feeling of confidence that the landing would be a walkover, or what was the feeling?
Not at all. No, I had no feeling at all about that. And I don't think that... When the Dublins and the when they came back, I had set up a little bit of a friendliness between some of the men in the Dublins, and one of them was in the hospital, the crew hospital, that was aft of the ship, and they were using that as a sort of prison. The ship landed. These fellows had broken away from the company, and they'd been able to get some drink somewhere, and they got themselves well drunk. And I was speaking to this particular man, and I said, "Aren't you afraid of being shot as you've been on active service?" "Oh no," he said, "I'm not afraid." He said, "I hope I killed 3 or 4 Turks before I shot, before he was shot." And I thought, well, I thought he seemed to be a very non-committal type of chap, and there was a certain amount of bravado. But anyway, when we did eventually land, I went to try and find out where he was. That's a bit before, that's a bit a little bit ahead of the story.
Might as well. Did you find him?
No. Didn't find him.
Well, was the ship very crowded? It sounds as if there's an awful lot of troops on board.
Well, there was. There was a lot of troops, yeah.
What were conditions like? Were it worse?
Well, it was only... we weren't on very long. We were not on the ship very long, because, as I say, they came aboard. We all went aboard. Or we were aboard the ship, and the others came aboard the ship. And it was just a case of the day or so, and then going up to the Dardanelles.
What were, from Mudros, what were the instructions that were given to you about the upcoming landings? What orders was your unit given? Do you know?
I never remember us getting any orders. There's a ship, when we set sail from Mudros, it was on the 24th of April. The 25th was the day of the landing. We set sail on the 24th, but in the evening. I think it was only about 40 sea miles from Mudros to Dardanelles. And before we entered Gallipoli waters, the Euralius was a navy ship. She came and edged alongside our ship and took all the men from these regiments that I've mentioned aboard.
What, they just jumped, or did they set up gangplanks?
No, they had that proper... They made a proper entrance, you know, either in the side of the ship or on the top of the ship. But so they were right alongside. You could step over onto the other ship, because the waters were quite calm and steady where you were. And the Euralis was quite a... Well... It was a fairly big ship, and as I said, most of these men went. Now, this Lieutenant Brown, who was our platoon officer,
this is signalling platoon.
No, the signalling was just well in the background. We weren't either signallers. We were back now in the ranks, as far as the signalers were concerned. We were signalers, but we weren't even attached. We were part of the battalion. Now, it transpired that the platoon that I was in C Company, with C Company, the platoon officer, this Lieutenant Brown, it tossed up as to what platoon should stay behind and help in getting the stores afloat into lighters and then to the beach. They tossed up what platoon, and it was our platoon that were the ones who had to stay behind on the boat. And that was, from then onwards, that was our occupation. Because the next morning, as I said, that we had to get all these stores unloaded from the hold and into the lighters that came alongside. whilst the men, fighting men, ships and whatever, were belting, you know, the Turks are supposed to be, on the 25th, on the Sunday.
What could you see at this time from of how the attack was going?
And so I remember very little. Very little. I could see the Queen Elizabeth on the skyline, way astern, but right over, you know, on the horizon. And that again proves my point about the 15 miles or 15 kilometres, 15 miles, because she was out as far as she was firing broadsides up into the Dardanelles, but we're heading in on hindsight, when you think of it, what were they trying to hit with firing broadsides? Because they had ships that were closer, nearer at hand, right in, that were firing as well. So they must have fired a lot of ammunition that was just wasted.
How far from shore was the boat while you were loading these stores into the lighters?
Well, we were only about a mile away, if we were that.
You were doing this while the rest of your unit was going in under the attack, were you?
Yeah, yeah.
What could you see of them going into the
Couldn't
attack?
Couldn't see any of them.
Was it dark?
No, it was light, it was daylight, but we weren't... actually, we were too involved in having to get this stuff ashore, you see. We had to unload it into these lighters. Otherwise, it was no use having men doing the fighting if there was no stores for them to come back to, you see.
Was there much noise of the fighting from the shore landing?
Well, fair amount, yes, yes. Oh, yes.
Was it a frightening noise? Or
no, it wasn't. No. No, being, of course, the distance away. See, you're about a mile away. Well, of course, you wouldn't... you'd hear plenty of noise, but... it wasn't so bad as when we got closer in and at night time, or late afternoon. Because in the... a pinnace came alongside when we got these things loaded and hooked up, as it were, and then pulled off, and we left the ship and said ta-ta, and off we went, and we were running to the beach.
How many lighters were being towed by the pinnace?
Well, there was two or three.
How full were the lighters?
Those lighters, eh?
How full were the lighters with stores?
Well, I really couldn't. There was no space. There was no space for living in there, because the part of the lighter that was holding cargo, that was full, which left the forward and the aft. It was just a flat surface of deck, you see.
So you had no shelter?
No. No shelter at all. In fact, when we did get in near to the beach.
Which beach?
The W Beach, where the Lancashire Fusiliers landed. When we did get in there, we didn't touch ground. We stuck for some unaccountable reason.
Offshore?
Offshore.
How far offshore? Approximately.
Let me think. At one time you could almost throw a stone to the beach. But then we drifted out. Because, as I say, the pinnace just, you know, cast off and expected us to run in on our own power, so to speak. Well, we had no means of any power. All that we had was a pump. And a It's gathering darkness and coming onto darkness by this thick place. And all the time that we were there, all through the night, there was this ping, as you know, ammunition, firing machine gun fire over the top of our heads. Because that's why I'm saying a ping. I mean, the fact of the matter was, you see, the people who were firing, the Turks who were firing, they couldn't fire with the machine guns pointing downwards. Their elevation was too great. All that they fired, they were firing over the top of our heads. See? Now they would realise that they would think that we were some sort of reserves that were coming up.
You were under full view then of the Turks, were you?
Well, we must have been full view of somebody, otherwise they wouldn't have been wasting their ammunition over us. But there was none of us ever hit on that part. And the fact of the matter was, you see, that we started to take in water, and all hands to the pump, and we were pumping that away hours, you know, as fast as one man finished, as fast as he finished, you'd have a go, pumping away, and eventually, in toward broke daylight again, we had to abandon the lighter. It's taking water too much, couldn't keep pace with it. So we transferred ourselves onto another lighter and stayed there, and they left us there all that next day.
Just want to ask a couple more questions about the first day, you know, when you were pulled in. What could you see of the situation on the beach as you approached it? Were there a lot of bodies lying? Were people fighting there? What was happening on the beach?
There was no fighting, particularly on the beach, but what we saw then, that had finished. I could remember seeing a saddle bar, it was the big fortress, the big fort. I could remember seeing the outline of one or two men who had tried to scale the heights, and they seemed as though they'd been riddled with bullets. But that only lasted for then the next day, nothing of that was. It had all been moved away.
There weren't many bodies lying on W Beach when you.
The next day when we did get ashore. Yeah.
Just the lighter you were on, did it actually sink?
The first one, yes.
Did you have any sort? What sort of stores were you carrying? Was it munitions and food?
No, we didn't. It was food. It wasn't munitions. It was food. Cases of biscuits, bully beef, and bacon. Because we had to broach one of the when we were rescued, the people who rescued us, they were in a steam pinnace, coal burning, and these chaps were as black as though they'd been working down the pit. And when they saw the situation we were in, well, we passed them over one of these cases of bacon, and they took that aboard and provided us with a meal. So in our turn, We are now at Tehran, and this is the almost 2 days afterwards. We went aboard there, down in our little cabins, and had some tea and bacon and that. That was the first bite at FS we'd had.
So you had no food from when you started landing on the 25th?
No.
Until when you landed?
From our breakfast on the 25th, we had nothing until the tea time, or 5 o'clock the next day.
The Monday.
And we'd been exposed to all that. In fact, the thing had drifted out into the channel. You know. And nobody cared two hoots about us.
How many of you were there?
Who was it?
There'd be about eight
or ten of us on that lighter.
So there's eight because or ten on each lighter.
If you know the type of lighter that used to use on the docks, in London docks, you know, they weren't small things.
What? So you were eventually rescued by a pinnace, were you?
Yeah.
And were you pulled into shore?
Yes, we pulled into shore. And of course, when we did get into shore, then we were relieved of our weight or whatever. I went to report, you know, to the whoever it was. I couldn't tell you.
To your unit. Had the battalion suffered many casualties in the landing?
I couldn't tell you. The battalion were all broken up. They were split up, they were split up intentionally because three platoons of my battalion, as far as I knew, were engaged in ferrying the troops ashore. And in some cases, you know, the whole boatload of them were killed. So we were very fortunate. And if we were fortunate, I'll tell you, if the whole night long we were under the lee of the I don't know whether it was the Cornwallis or the Swiftsure. I think it was the Cornwallis. And when she fired a broadside, and we were at yards away, we went up and down and up and down, and it was like being at Blackpool on the hurdy-gurdies, you know, the up above and then down and up above, up and down, you know, and I had that to contend with as well. And on a lighter, then all this, small arms fire that was coming across as well. So it was pretty lucky that we didn't get knocked out ourselves.
Well, during this period, did you feel scared or lonely or anything?
No.
How did you feel? Just
didn't felt all right. I say you don't when you're at our age, in your 20s, you don't feel so much about what life is all about, do you? It's only when you assume responsibilities, say men that are married and they know that they've got, it's sort of impressed upon them, isn't it? And to me, well, of course, it was just an escapade. And even when I got off the lighter, I went aboard and went under the beach. The first thing I noticed was the sad part to me was to see the men whom we'd been conversing with, or could have been conversing with, just a few hours before, who were laid out in platoon fashion, but dead on the beach.
How many were there, approximately? Was there a large number? Or?
Well, it'd be about, it could have been about 40.
Yeah.
But of course, that's men that were killed on the beach itself, because before I got ashore, they cleared all that barbed wire that was in the water or thereabouts, cleared all that away. But there were lots of men that couldn't get ashore because of the conditions. You see, they were held fast in the first place when they were wounded, because they had their packs and extra ammunition and such like. They had the lapels fastened.
Yeah.
And they couldn't undo them if they were wounded. So that weight took them back, and they dropped into the water. And they lost their lives that way, a lot of them. And so life went on. How we went on for food, well, there were field kitchens. I think that's what we'd be drinking tea and drinking tea, but well, you'd drink tea and bully beef, you know, corned beef and what have you.
Can you remember what happened to me after you'd rejoined your unit?
Well,
what was left of it?
I can only recall wending my way, I suppose, along with others, to V Beach, where the River Clyde was. And at that particular day, the Wednesday, by the Wednesday, the Turks were making a counter-attack. And there again, all hands were to the pump. They wanted men to go up with the ammunition. So I was busy doing that sort of work, you know, gathering up the ammunition, filling it up for the, you know, the machine gun panniers and such like, so they carry them up, mule packs, taking them up to the where they were required. And then I came in with that. I came in contact with that officer that I was talking about, Sinclair Tisdale. He was supposed to. He had done a heroic act. He was just the type of man he would. He was supposed to have